Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And is this our first killer appliance movie? I sure think so. The only thing that I was thinking could possibly compete with it is when we did Chopping Mall, which is about some like security robots in a shopping mall that go mad and try to murder a bunch of party teens. But I think this may well be our first film more in the zone of consumer or domestic appliances that go haywire and seek blood.
I think you're probably right. The only other film that we've looked at on Weird House Cinema that comes close would be Ghost in the Machine, which wasn't about like the appliances or any kind of AI going haywire. It was about an entity, a mind possessing all of these things, and that is the thing that causes, say, a microwave to malfunction and microwave an entire room.
It's a serial killer whose brain gets sucked into the telephone wires and then it can inhabit any machine. Okay. So that's a good point. That is kind of a killer appliance movie, but I think you have to break killer appliance horror movies down into two very distinct camps. There is one in which multiple appliances can be commandeered by an evil spirit or multiple appliances are attacking. So Ghost in the Machine would be one. Maximum Overdrive is another one. I think there's some kind of alien force in that turns.
Well, I think Maximum Overdrive should be our terminology for a full blown all appliances attack all humans scenario.
Right, exactly. Yes. So that's like all your soda machines, all your hair dryers, they're mm-hmm. all on the attack. But the other camp is the movie in which there is a single appliance or machine or inanimate object that seeks human blood. And there your examples would be something like Deathbed, the bed that eats people, or the movie we're going to be talking about today, The Lift from 1983, a Dutch killer elevator movie.
And based on what I've been able to determine, I think this may be the first real killer elevator movie that that either inspired other killer elevator movies or at least beat them to the punch.
Are there really other killer elevator movies? I feel like I looked up a list of elevator horror movies, but they're just like they just take place in an elevator or feature an elevator.
I mean, I don't know. I guess some of these would require getting to the like the spoiler point to find out, is this an elevator or is there like an evil psychopath controlling the elevator? I don't know what the, you know, the particular twist is going to be, but this is definitely a killer elevator movie. Absolutely, to its core.
Oh, wait, I just remembered something. I don't know if you did you ever see Speed, you know, the 90s, Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That begins with it's sort of a killer elevator scenario. The elevator has been hijacked by Dennis Hopper and it smashes an Estevez.
Right, before he wait, an Estevez? No. You're confusing it with the 1990s Mission Impossible movie.
Oh, that's an elevator that I don't know if there's a psychopath behind it, but
yeah,
that elevator
Ford.
Goes haywire and it smashes an Estevez. Are you telling me an Estevez is not smashed in Speed?
No, I think someone is killed, but it's no. The problem in Speed is that Dennis Hopper commandeers an elevator.
Okay.
Anyway, it's his trial run of the bus plan. Basically, he puts a bunch of bombs on an elevator, and it does not kill
an Estevez.
No, I don't think there is an Estevez in Speed.
Okay.
There's a Jeff Daniels in Speed.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay, man.
It's Keanu and Jeff Daniels are the cops, and Sandra Bullock is the bus passenger who ends up driving.
Okay. It's been a while since I've seen that. I've clearly fused it together with at least two other films.
Well, we're off to a great start here. But yeah, okay. Let's just name some other movies that you can think of that have elevator scenes in them.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things about elevators. I think they're an interesting subject for a film like this, because there's something about elevators that resonate with us. You think of all the various elevator scenes in various films, and sometimes it's an action centerpiece. Other times it's just a situation. Very often it's just a place for two characters to have a conversation between scenes. But they're often very memorable. Like just, I was thinking like off the top of my head, what are some of the key elevator scenes I think of? I think of Big Trouble in Little China. They're basically just standing around in there, but it's a great scene.
I'm kind of feeling good.
Yeah, it's a wonderful scene, even though they're just using it like normal people use an elevator as a way. Well, actually, there are multiple elevator scenes in that movie that are great because there's a flooding elevator. They have to escape.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But then you have some real action centerpieces, particularly in two different James Cameron films. You got Aliens and you've got Terminator 2, both of which involve people fleeing into an elevator and then a superpowered enemy prying the elevator open only to be blasted with a shotgun.
What do you know? You're right. Yeah, so in one case, it's Robert Patrick as the liquid metal, and then the other case is just an alien warrior.
Yeah, and I don't think until today I'd ever put it together that those two scenes are essentially the same scene, but they're both great. Other key elevator scenes that come to mind, I mean, you got like The Shining with the blood flowing out of it. You've got that wonderful switcheroo that takes place in The Silence of the Lambs. There's a really bloody reveal in The Untouchables from Brian De Palma. So those are just some of the ones that come to mind. Like there's something about the elevator that just works great for theater. It has its own curtains that open and close. it goes up and down. It smashes. You can climb on top of it. There are cables up there. Like we're just obsessed with the elevator.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that the elevator doors open in the same way that curtains open, like you say, I think that has a natural revelatory quality that calls to mind sort of an unveiling, because there are a lot of scenes in movies, even beyond what you mentioned, where elevator doors peel back to reveal a scene that shocks someone who's there waiting for the elevator to arrive. So like in Die Hard too, you know, there's a scene like that. And The Lift, the movie we're going to talk about today, I would say has at least five scenes where we don't immediately see what's in the elevator, but we see the doors open and then someone is there waiting for the elevator and they react with horror to whatever they see inside. You know, they react like they're looking at the security footage from Event Horizon.
Yeah. And, you know, as we'll get into, I think, you know, you might well go into a movie like The Lift and think, all right, elevators work well, like a small dose here and there, maybe a couple of elevator scenes in a film. But if you build an entire movie based on the elevator, are you going to be able to maintain that level of interest in the elevator? Are you going to be able to find all these interesting ways to use it? And I think the answer is yes. I think this movie pulls it off.
Well, yeah, and I think it it partially does so by having a sense of humor. I mean, one thing I was kind of surprised by was the trailer made me think that this movie would be drier and that more of the absurdity of it would just kind of flow out of an understated realization of its absurd core premise. But in fact, this is a fairly juicy, campy movie. It's more along the lines of Chopping Mall or something like that.
I can only suspect that this is even more the case if one is watching it in the original language, because I watched it dubbed into English, and this was the only option available to me. And the dub is very good, but the dub is also, like, I feel like I've heard these same dub voices before in some cases, you know? It feels like the same sort of American dub you'd get on any number of Italian films from the same time period.
Oh, but I absolutely loved the dub, because some of the casting, or at least, I don't know if it was like that they just cast people who sound this way or if they made conscious choices to deliver their lines in this hilarious manner. But for example, the detective in the movie, who his English dubbed voice sounds like somebody doing audiobook tracks for an Encyclopedia Britannica. So there's like a scene when we first meet him, he's talking about why he doesn't like elevators. He says, "I prefer the stairs. Suffer from claustrophobia. That's why I became a policeman. Would much rather put others in cells than wind up myself in prison."
Yeah. It's the dub is very enjoyable, but I think that dubbing in general, it lends itself to a sort of dry humor at times, you know?
Yes.
So I can only imagine what the original language of this would have felt like if one is an actual Dutch viewer of the film. And yeah, I should drive that home. This is I think our first Dutch movie that we've looked at on Weird House Cinema. Though we have discussed films with that have involved Dutch directors, we've also of course discussed Dutch actors. Rutger Hauer is of course probably the most famous Dutch actor of the 20th century and beyond. And then
also, I'm pretty sure that Hawaiian werewolf movie we watched had Dutch subtitles, because that's where we got Work Beast.
Yes, the version that we found on YouTube had Dutch subtitles, though it was itself not a Dutch film. But that was another foray into the Dutch world on this podcast.
I apologize, I interrupted your flow. Though, what was the other thing you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to reiterate that, our first true killer appliance movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. I would say that Chopping Mall does not count. Ghost in the Machine does not count, because Ghost in the Machine is more in the Maximum Overdrive vein. Chopping Mall, those are killer robots anyway. They just started attacking the wrong people.
Now, sometimes killer appliance movies, and when I say appliance, I'm going to use that very broadly to apply it to everything from a bed to an elevator. But a lot of times it is something like a bed, something that you don't think of as being dangerous at all. But I think the elevator is a very interesting pick, because it's an amazing technological advancement, and one that, like all technological inventions, you know, you had maybe a rockier start at times. But, for the most part, I don't think I really hesitate when I board an elevator, or at least that wasn't the case in pre-pandemic times. I might think about that more now, like how many people are going to be on this, are they masked, et cetera. But generally, I have a lot of confidence in the technology and the regulations surrounding that technology. And yet, at the same time, I know that I have these on and off dreams about boarding strange elevators that are in varying stages of disrepair. So I feel like underneath the surface of my consciousness, there are a lot of more complicated thoughts about the elevator and what the elevator is capable of.
Oh, it sounds like you're a kindred soul with the inspector in this film.
Well, I'm not, but that's the thing. I'm not afraid of elevators at all.
Okay.
I'm perfectly comfortable getting on them.
Just have the dreams where you inhabit his frame of mind.
Right. Which makes me think that, with all of us, and in part of it probably comes from movies, right? We ride elevators, and for the most part, I think we're, most of us out there probably don't encounter much in the way of mishaps involving elevators. Though I could see where that would certainly impact your appreciation of the technology if it happened that way. But otherwise, we're watching all these movies, and in movies, elevators very often get stuck and people have to climb through them and on top of them, or they plummet, etc. And in this movie, elevators will do all of those things.
Yes. And but another thing is that I can't tell how much of the weirdness of the way elevators are treated in this movie is due to this being a movie from the early 80s in the Netherlands, or if it's just like weird about elevators, because the characters in this movie talk about elevators like they are a kind of new and dangerous thing. And I don't think they were particularly new or dangerous in the Netherlands in the 1980s. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to really research that. But there's at least a time or two where a character makes a seemingly outrageous claim about elevator safety at the time. I mean, I'm happy to be corrected on the matter, but we'll discuss that in a bit.
There's some scene where they're like, did you know that 7 million people are decapitated by elevators every month?
Yeah, it's almost that ridiculous. I have it in the notes, so we'll get to that stat. But first, Joe, would you go ahead and give us an elevator pitch for this elevator movie?
Oh, I think here's one where we're obligated to say pun not intended. But when an elevator in a Dutch tower building starts attacking and killing random people, it is up to intrepid elevator repairman Felix Adelaar to debug the death lift.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and listen to that trailer.
Deep inside this vertical city, a machine has come to life. A machine with a terrible secret. Modern technology gave birth to the lift. But the lift has made itself smarter, stronger, and deadlier. Take the stairs. Take the stairs. For God's sake, take the stairs.
Now, I don't know if the audio we just featured included the tagline, but if not, it is take the stairs, for God's sake, take the stairs. Excellent classic horror, you know, it's very don't.
Awesome. Yeah, I have to admit, I usually watch the trailer for a film before I view it, but in this case, you were convinced that this was a movie to watch. I looked at the IMDb listing for it. I said, let's do it. But I went ahead and skipped watching the trailer completely so I could go into it, rather fresh.
Well, sometimes it's good to go in fresh, but in this case, I'd just say, watch the trailer.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now, I guess to talk about the real creative forces behind The Lift, number one has got to be old Dick Moss.
That's right. Dick Moss, the last name spelled M-A-A-S, director, writer, and also composed the music on this film, which I have to say, I thought was rather pleasant. It's a nice atmospheric electronic score. You know, nothing that I need to seek out on vinyl necessarily, but I thought it was solid and did its job well.
No acoustic instruments to get your hackles up.
Right. No stirring piano pieces. So I say good job, Dick Moss. Now, Dick Moss, Dutch film director, screenwriter, film producer, and film composer, who's produced quite a filmography of TV and screen credits between 1984 and 2016. His first feature was a comedy called Rigor Mortis in 1981, and this film from 83 was the follow-up. And it was apparently something of a hit, at least in the long run, earning sort of a B-movie following over time. It's listed in the Psychotronic Video Guide. And allegedly, Dick Moss was offered the chance to direct both a Nightmare on Elm Street movie after this, as well as a Jean-Claude Van Damme film. One assumes that these are two separate films and not the same film. But at any rate, he declined and instead went on to make the Dutch action flick Amsterdammed instead, a film that I haven't seen but was already familiar with due to its following and, of course, that just ridiculous title that was so well chosen.
Having seen The Lift, I would love to see what his Nightmare on Elm Street movie would have been like.
I can see it. I can see it. Where would you have, if you could, put him in there, put him in the mix, which director would you take out and slot Dick Moss in?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I might replace part five, The Dream Child. That one's not a lot of fun.
Okay. And do you think you could also fit Jean-Claude Van Damme in there as well?
Yes, Jean-Claude Van Damme would play, he would play Freddy Krueger's twin brother. no explanation on that. We'll just, you know, put him in another sweater. It'll work.
Okay, sounds good. All right, Dick Moss also had a lot of success with the Flotter comedy series, which I'm to understand is kind of a politically incorrect satire series that was controversial at the time, but also generated a big following. And while his comedies seem more aimed at a Dutch audience, his action and horror films seem to have a broader aim in mind. And he eventually made a few films with more American star power, which includes 1999's Do Not Disturb, starring William Hurt, Jennifer Tilly, Michael Chiklis, and Dennis Leary.
Weird. Okay.
And he, of course, also helmed an American remake of this movie, The Lift, in 2001, a film titled either Down or The Shaft, depending on where you're acquiring it or where you might have seen it. It's not a film that I've watched in its entirety, but I signed up for the Full Moon Channel to watch The Lift, and the remake is also on the Full Moon Channel. So I watched a little of it and skipped around, and it's not in its entirety a shot for shot remake, but sections of it are definitely seem to be a shot for shot remake with say CGI assisted effects instead of practical effects.
Oh, bummer. Though I'm sure that is safer. The main reading about the production I did was on IMDb, which has, you know, some user submitted content. You can't always be sure about that, but it does sound like some of the effects may have had people a little bit worried while they were shooting them. Like at least at some point, it is alleged that they filmed a scene where a guy gets decapitated by an elevator by actually sort of putting a guy's head under an elevator, but they did it in reverse.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know.
That is a legitimately horrifying scene, and I will say it is horrifying in both the remake and the original. Even though I'm going to lean towards the practical effects versus the CGI, I still have to say it's pretty horrifying to watch in both cases.
Well, I guess I'd say my preference is, yes, I always prefer practical effects pretty much. They look better, but you can build like a fake elevator that has no weight, you know.
Right.
But I think that probably wasn't within the budget of what they
were. Right. I definitely like knowing that nobody almost got actually decapitated in a film that I'm watching. Now, that update, that 2001 remake, also had a pretty great cast. It had Naomi Watts. This is Naomi Watts pre-Mulholland Drive, by the way. Featured a villainous role played by Michael Ironside, who is, of course, Ooh. Always tremendous. You have Ron Perlman in there, Edward Herman, and Dan Hedaya.
Oh, and also, this is funny, the main character in the remake, by the way, I did not know that this guy had remade The Lift for American audiences when I picked this movie, but the main character in the remake is James Marshall, who was the biker boy in Twin Peaks, and he was also one of the kids in, what's it called, A Few Good Men. He's the kind of not too bright of the two accused.
Well, yeah, I barely remember that film, but I'll tell you this.
it's not really Weird House Cinema material.
yeah, not so much.
They'll love a good sanctimonious courtroom drama.
At any rate, it looks like the remake is enjoyable on its own terms as well. But it definitely get that Americanized sense. Like from the get go, there are more curse words. There's more nudity, and there's also a bazooka and an Aerosmith song in there.
An Aerosmith song?
Yeah.
Which song?
Oh, you know which song. It's an elevator movie. Which one are they going to put in?
Oh, of course. Okay. I was thinking maybe Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Nope.
It's playing as the guy gets decapitated by an elevator.
I think it's the credit song, actually. All right. Well, Moss, he was not done there. Dick Moss also went on to direct the 2010 film Scent, or I think it's sometimes... released as The Saint. And this was his return to the horror genre. It is a film about a killer satanic Sinterklaas figure, an evil punishing Dutch Santa Claus, which was something of a hit at the time. Apparently it was kind of controversial, but garnered an audience. Like I think I've been noticing the box for this film at Videodrome for many years, but I just haven't seen it.
Mm.
Massa's most recent film was 2016's Prey, and this was about a killer CGI lion rampaging through Amsterdam, starring English actor Mark Frost. And while this was his last film to date, Dick Moss was the subject of the 2020 documentary, The Dick Moss Method, which I was looking around. I don't know that this is available to us yet, but I'm kind of interested to see it.
What is The Dick Moss Method?
I'm not sure, but it seems to have been a successful method, because he was by all accounts a pretty successful filmmaker, especially within the Netherlands, and clearly was able to reach beyond it. I mean, we're talking about him here today.
Okay, but it is at least a method. The method is a method of filmmaking. I was trying to imagine, is this like an alternative to the Heimlich maneuver? Like,
no, I'm assuming it's about his approach to filmmaking.
Okay.
All right, so that is the creative force behind the scenes. We should get into the cast a little bit, though this is definitely one of those cases where a lot of people were involved in this, and just about everybody in it is great in their own way. But how many Dutch actors, can we really mention on the show if there aren't a lot of real connections to be made, especially for a largely English-speaking audience?
Apologies in advance on our attempts to pronounce these Dutch names. But we should talk about the guy who plays the protagonist, Huub Stapel?
Mm-hmm. Yep. He plays, Felix Adelaar. Adelaar is our elevator technician hero. He was born 1954, a Dutch actor who has popped up in a number of Dick Moss pictures, often in the lead. So he's in Flotter. He's the lead in Amsterdam, and he's also the evil Nicholas in the Scent movie. So he plays the evil Santa Claus figure in that.
This would explain. So in The Lift, he's got very boyish good looks. So I kept comparing. Actually, he looks a lot like Paul McCartney in a way.
He does. Yeah. I mean, he's got a great look. And he's a solid actor.
Yeah. He's got a good kind of stoic screen presence. He's good looking. He looks kind of like a Paul McCartney with a little dash of Oscar Isaac in there as well.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
But the thing about this would explain why we found this hilarious when we first looked him up. The picture that came up was a picture of him dressed as Father Christmas with scary looking shadows around him.
Right. And an inverted cross on the big Santa Pope hat. Yep. The bishop's hat.
Very good.
So Stapel has been in a number of Dutch films, so it's very active. So I'm not going to mention everything, but I have to mention this one. He was in the 1988 TV movie about Anne Frank, starring Mary Steenburgen, Paul Scofield, and Tom Wilkinson. Actually, I think Tom Wilkinson had a smaller role, but he's in it.
I don't think I ever saw this.
I didn't either, but the interesting thing about it, it's again, 1988, it's titled The Attic, the Hiding of Anne Frank. And I'm not sure if it's, good or bad. I have no information about the quality of the picture, but it featured the cinematography talents of one Peter Jackson.
Huh.
And it launched on the Kraft Golden Showcase Network. Yes, a television network that was created by Kraft Foods, and I think ultimately lasted in one form or another almost a decade.
With the dramatization about Anne Frank?
Yeah.
That is a weird venue for that.
I was not able to find any other information about this TV network that perhaps comes from another dimension, I'm very interested. What else was on there? I think there were two different movies that I saw credited as having been a Kraft Golden Showcase Network production, but clearly you got to have more than that, especially if you're on the air in some form or another for many years.
Wow. Well, as far as I know, I've never heard of that.
Okay. Let's move on to our next actor. This is the actor, Willeke van Amelrooy, who plays Mieke de Beer. She is, this character is essentially our scrappy news reporter. You know, you got to have a scrappy news reporter in a picture like this who's all about getting in there, finding the answers.
Yeah, she, in fact, I would say that this movie sort of has two protagonists, Hube Staple as the elevator repairman is one, and she sort of comes in later to become the other lead. And she's pursuing forbidden knowledge and sort of spurs our young Paul McCartney hero to dive deeper.
Right. Yeah. So the interesting thing here is that Willeke is a major Dutch actor and director who appeared in films during the 1970s opposite such actors as Rutger Hauer in the films The Year of the Cancer and a film by the name of Gripstra and De Geer. And then she's also worked with other major actors of Dutch cinema and international cinema, such as Rick de Goor and Telly Savalas. That in the film Killer, The Killer is on the Phone from 1972. That's the one with Telly Savalas in it.
Hmm.
She also appeared in the 1981 Ate de Jong film, A Flight of Rainbirds, starring Jerome Crabbe. Ate de Jong, of course, directed Highway to Hell.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But this is just working up to her most famous film credit. She appeared in because this one was a major hit. She has the lead role in the 1995 Marlene Gorris film Antonia's Line, which is about a Dutch matron. This is a movie that won an Academy Award for Best Foreign Film. And if you're not familiar with Marlene Gorris, she is a noted Dutch feminist and LGBT director and writer. It was a huge hit, and it's supposed to be just a great film.
Well, I've never seen any of her good movies, but she's great in this B movie. She's got a great sense of humor. Like, I think she gets what this movie's about. She gets the tone, she gets the vibe, and has the right kind of sense of mischief about pursuing the plot.
Yeah, totally. She nails it, and she's, I think, still active. A film that some viewers / listeners may be familiar with is that Willeke was in the 2006 film The Lake House that starred Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock, and Christopher Plummer.
Hmm. Never saw that either.
Now, once again, there are various other actors in this who are all great. A number of them seem to have been Dick Moss regular players, and any number of them have connections to folks like Rutger Hauer and Rick de Goor, and to each other, of course. But I think that'll have to do it. But if you are more familiar with Dutch cinema than we are, definitely take a look at the listing for The Lift on IMDb, and you may find some amusing connections.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Well, are you ready to talk about the plot?
Let's get into the plot.
You know, this movie lets you know what it's about at the very beginning because it begins with a pan over a passing elevator that mimics the Star Destroyer at the beginning of Star Wars.
Yes.
So that comes along with the credits. But when we first meet some humans and have some drama, we get into something that is a regular feature of killer appliance movies. In fact, not just killer appliance movies, because killer appliance movies have something in common with creature features, slasher movies, a lot of monster movies and other horror subgenres, which is that the film must begin with an attack by the antagonist, whether that's human, animal, monster, or even an inanimate object, on a random person or group of random people before we meet our protagonist.
Absolutely. I mean, you see this rule in play probably most famously in Jaws, but right. you can probably pinpoint it in just about anything. Like one prime example that comes to mind is the Game of Thrones franchise. I think both the first novel
and the series
begin with just a little prologue in which people are slaughtered by White Walkers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What's it? I can almost remember one of their names. Like Waymar Royce, I think, is one of them. And they're up north of the wall or something. And
yeah, I remember reading
that. Get them.
I remember reading it for the first time. And I was doing that thing that you sometimes do with books where you're like, all right, this is my guy. All right, I got his name down. Yep, I'm picturing what he looks like. And then George R. R. Martin, like, kills him in one chapter.
Oh, dead. Yeah.
Yeah, all of them.
Oh, no, one of them survives the prologue to be beheaded in the following chapter.
Oh, okay, okay.
But anyway, the lift adheres to form on this matter. So we begin the movie in a restaurant on the top floor of an office/apartment building. I guess this would technically be a mixed-use development to use. I don't know if they used that term back then, but that's what it is. It's this tower building. It's got apartments, it's got offices, and it's got a restaurant on the top floor. And there are four rowdy drunk people who are overstaying their welcome after close at a restaurant on the top floor that we later find out is called Restaurant Icarus, which is an interesting choice.
I did not notice that in my viewing of the film this morning. So that's wonderful. Wonderfully on the nose.
It's like if we try to earn a Michelin star, we will soar too high and then crash into the waves. Outbreaks of listeria.
Oh, and by the way, regarding this scene, get up on my as someone with restaurant experience soapbox. Folks, please don't overstay your welcome at a restaurant after close. If you come in late, you know, that's fine. But people are trying to close up. Just try to get done with what you're doing as quickly as possible and get out of there. People got things to do when they're closing up a restaurant. You got to bust dishes. You got to clean the dining room. A lot of times people can't do that until you're gone. So just don't hang around if it's after close.
I remember a Pizza Hut that I went to when I was a kid. What they would do is they would flip the lights on and off. I don't know if that's standard operating procedure at restaurants.
I like that. That's a good assertive manager trying to get you out of there.
Well, that flies at Pizza Hut, but this is Restaurant Icarus, so they can't do that.
This is a fancy place, though. Mm-hmm. So this is a fancy place with like a maitre d' and in a you know fancy little outfit. I think. The maitre d' here might be the guy we saw in the credits whose name was Johann Hobo.
It is. It is, definitely.
Okay. But despite this being a fancy place, these diners are, I don't know, they're up to no good. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with them, but they're clearly drunk and getting into trouble. They are cavorting around with sloppy jokes that very much reminded me of the guy in the 500 Little Wigs sketch in I Think You Should Leave. You remember the guy who's – he's so comfortable in his skin because he can go bald gracefully.
I do not remember that one specifically, but I totally get you on the general Tim Robinson vibe here because, they are just ridiculously, outrageously drunk, these four. We're embarrassed for them. We're embarrassed for the people who have to watch them and are waiting for them to leave.
Right. So anyway, they get shooed out of the restaurant and they're taking the elevator down to meet their cab. But while they're in the elevator, lightning strikes and the power goes out. And then they're fooling around in the elevator doing all kinds of stuff. And then something starts happening. And it is as if they are being ambiently attacked by like the air in the elevator. I really did not understand what was going on here. They react almost as if they are being attacked with some kind of sonic weapon or psychic pain ray.
Yeah, we're to understand that something seems to go wrong with both the movement of the elevator and also the air circulation. Like and also suddenly they're heating up. So it's like it's like they're being microwaved in the elevator somehow.
Yes, like rays are hitting them and causing agonizing pain. But there's like a kind of grating noise, which made me think sonic weapon. Somebody's aiming some kind of like dew, dew kind of thing at them. But no, it turns out. I was sure they were dead when the power came.
Oh, yeah. I thought so, too, because you see, you have a POV shot from one of the women in there as like everybody else falls out and then her vision blurs and goes dark.
Exactly. And so then the doors open to reveal a gaggle of dumbfounded waiters and they look inside the elevator in horror. But then the next scene lets us on to the facts that they were not killed. They were nearly killed. And the problem was that the air conditioning failed, which just does not, I don't know. It doesn't really comport with what we were seeing, but okay. But that's our prologue. That's our attack before we meet the protagonist. So the next thing you got to do is meet the protagonist. We meet him with his family. And again, this is Hube Staple, who plays this character named Felix Adelar, our stoic elevator repairman. Again, he looks kind of like Paul McCartney. And we get some foreshadowing of some family dynamics that are going to go on later in the movie. Because when we first meet him, he is nursing a black eye that he received apparently because he smiled at some lady and her husband punched him in the face.
Yeah, and this is like the first kind of red flag with this character. We end up spending a lot of time with the family. And I think one of the things that I've been thinking about with this movie is that generally in a film like this, the film of this caliber, you know, essentially a B film that's a horror film, you're going to go just widely in one direction or another with a character like this. Like either he's a great family man, you know, put in an unnatural situation, or he's a complete dog put in an unnatural situation.
Yeah, he's not really either here.
No, and in fact, there's a fair amount of ambiguity regarding like what's really wrong in this relationship with his wife. We find out later they've been together like 10 years or nearly 10 years. And, you know, there's not, I don't know. It's almost like within this killer elevator movie, Dick Moss was also making this kind of more subtle family meditation, you know, and, and sort of a look at like what happens with relationships over time. I don't know. So we get more information about this as we move on, but we begin with this breakfast scene, family breakfast scene. And I think it's actually a really admirable sequence because there's a lot going on in this scene. We're establishing the characters, getting a hint of this family dynamic we've been discussing. We're entering into the plot, and there's still time for some family humor in there. There's some like legitimately kind of like some funny stuff that's discussed. And then in the background at the end, there's a cat scratching at the sliding glass door trying to get in. So I don't know. I just felt like it was a very competent scene for a horror movie. Plus, you also have a toy ambulance gag that's really great. Like after that whole business happened with the elevator and the four drunks, we cut flat, just a flash cut to an ambulance seemingly going down the road. And then you're watching it and you're like, oh, I think that's a toy. And then you're like, no, I don't think it's a toy at all. It's a real ambulance. And then it runs into somebody's foot and you realize, oh, yes, it is a toy. It is the son's toy.
Yeah, that one got me too. I thought that was a really good visual gag. And then one of the funny things is that immediately the mom is like, couldn't you get our son a quieter toy, like a book? And he's like, no, loud toys are good. That doesn't seem like a very common parental opinion, but...
Right. They have very, very different opinions on this, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of room to compromise. So another problem sign for this relationship.
Well, anyway, Felix gets a call to go check out the lift, and so begins the investigation that will define the rest of the film. But he gets a call, some people nearly suffocated in an elevator last night. You got to go figure out what's wrong with it. So we see him drive to the office tower, and he gets into a consultation with is this with the building superintendent or with a different guy? It's with the guy named Bush.
The really tall, chatty guy.
Yes. And so he meets with Bush and starts trying to figure out what's going on with the elevator. And I thought one of the first things that was funny was he goes in there and he just kind of fiddles with one button or switch real quick. And then he's like, looks like nothing's wrong to me.
Yeah. They're able to tell so much from just that one little switch, which, is in it. I don't know. Maybe there was something in the dub on this because I feel like for the most part, this is a movie that seems to take elevators very seriously. Yes. Like we're using a lot of like legitimate elevator shaft, locations. They at one point we're in an elevator factory or a repair shop or something. So like it really got in there and wanted to learn about elevators. And there's a lot of talk about how elevators work. So it feels a little weird that we have this sequence where they're just flipping a switch and making very broad statements about the functionality of this particular lift.
Now, on the flip side of what you say, I feel like you and I are usually pretty careful not to conclude things are really simple. You always assume that things might be more complicated than they look at first. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if elevators are really as electronically complicated as this movie ultimately makes them seem. Because the next thing that happens is he's like, well, okay, I got to go up and look at the control panel. And when they reach the roof, or I guess the machine room at the top of the building where the control panel is, they start talking about how there's this other box, this blue box containing the microprocessors that guide the lift. And it's full of all these chips and it's all this complicated computer stuff that's way over his head. Again, I want to be fair, but I don't know if elevators are really all that computationally complicated.
Well, they mentioned that you don't want all three elevators opening on the same floor at the same time. And you got to have microprocessors. You got to have chips to take care of that, Joe.
All right. Maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe I'm wrong.
There used to be a guy in there controlling the elevator. Now that's it's true. Chips doing it. So
right. By the way, we're going to get more. This is not the last we've heard of chips in this movie. There's going to be so much about chips. And it's one of my favorite things about the film. But while he's up there fiddling around with the control panel, trying to see if that gives any indication of what went wrong the night before, there's some idle chit chat about the last guy, the last elevator repairman whose name was Brooker. And they're like, oh, too bad he went totally insane. He spent a really long time on the last maintenance visit.
But they said he was great. They said this was what he was like so competent. He spent a lot of time on the last visit to this elevator.
Right. So Felix is not able to identify the problem. He says, well, maybe it's just a short circuit. But ultimately, he doesn't know. So he goes back home, and then we get some more scenes at the home with the family discussing things. Felix and his wife discuss how she is saving the caps to some kind of brand of beverage bottle. I think it might be just seltzer or something. And she's saving the caps because if she collects 100 of them, she could win a trip to Hawaii.
Right. Yeah. And he's just kind of like, didn't we go to an island last year? So there's a huge disconnect yeah. here where like she wants to go to Hawaii. He's like, I've been to an island. What could Hawaii possibly offer me?
Yes.
And then water she's on all like, sides. I've done it.
They have some great exchange. I don't remember exactly. It's something she's like, you're not romantic anymore. And he goes, I'm still that way.
I am still that thing you said. I will not say it, but I am that thing.
And then, so, okay, from here, the movie continues according to the Killer X movie format. So you've got your initial attack, check. Meet your protagonist, check. Initial investigation turns up nothing, check. So now you're 20 minutes in. Guess what it's time for? 1 to 3 more Killer X attacks. In this case, it is the killer elevator. And what do you know? I think we get 2 of them in this case. So in the first attack, the elevator murders a blind man by opening the doors without a car present and tricking him into it tricks him into walking into the shaft and falling to his death. And this one felt especially awful.
Yeah, this is one they also did in the remake. So fans of the first film, don't worry, they did it again. But yeah, I didn't particularly like this one because it felt kind of mean-spirited, but also it runs contrary to everything I've seen regarding blind or sight challenged people navigating public spaces. Generally, it seems like people like using a cane in these cases are more aware of their physical surroundings than sighted people who are distracted by their phones and so forth. So I didn't really buy for a minute that he would have just walked into that empty elevator shaft without like tapping the floor of the elevator, or in this case, the yawning absence in front of him.
But then the second attack feels more sort of on brand for a movie of this type. It is where the elevator attacks a couple of night security guards. So there are 2 guards who are there. I don't know, you know, it's 2 in the morning and the place should be deserted. And you got your 2 guards. You got a young guard who's very well behaved. He's an Eagle Scout type. You find out he is engaged to be married and he does not drink on the job. And then there's an older guard who very much advocates drinking on the job.
Not only does he advocate drinking on the job, he advocates just all matter of hell raising and brags about the fact that he apparently caught so many STDs when he was younger that he is now immune to penicillin.
That is what he says. Yes.
Yes.
And then he, wouldn't you know it, you know, that they start noticing the elevators are acting weird. So they've run up and down the stairs chasing the elevators that appear to be going up and down by themselves. And then eventually the gin guzzling guard goes up to an elevator shaft and then the door slams shut on his head. And then the elevator just slides on down and decapitates him like a square guillotine.
It is a horrifying scene. This is the scene we were talking about earlier. There's a version of it in both the original and the remake. And like, again, it's this one where it's virtually shot for shot remake with a CGI instead of a practical. But yeah, in this movie, yeah, absolutely horrifying. Fake head falling down the elevator shaft and landing virtually in the dead blind man's lap.
I would say this scene in particular is a strangely powerful combination of actually horrifying and comedic at the same time.
Yeah. And like you've pointed out before on the show, like having that comedic element perhaps intensifies what you're willing to buy, you know, in the sequence. So it helps make it work better.
So anyway, after this, we meet the bumbling detective who comes in to explain that he doesn't like elevators, prefers the stairs, and starts spitting like elevator tragedy facts at people. But this is also the guy I mentioned earlier who sounds like he's doing the audiobook track for an encyclopedia. You know what I realized? This may be way too niche, but for anybody who's ever played the Mass Effect video games, He sounds like the voiceover who reads all of the like encyclopedia entries in that game for the aliens and stuff.
Huh. Okay. Now, this is the character that has some wonderful sort of anti-elevator facts and propaganda on hand. Mm-hmm. The one that he belts out that really astounded me is the idea that 250,000 people per year get stuck in elevators in the Netherlands alone. So this is 1983. I didn't research this, but that just sounds like a very high number. 250,000 people per year in the Netherlands stuck in elevators.
Where are they getting their elevators?
I don't know. I mean, I want to see a full breakdown on that. Like, how many elevators were there in the Netherlands in 1983? How many people were getting stuck on each one?
Who's collecting this data?
It just sounds like a crazy number.
Yeah, how are they getting this number? Do they have a government task force that has to collect a report anytime somebody gets stuck in an elevator?
Yeah, so I don't know. It felt really high. Maybe it's accurate. Maybe I'm the fool here, but I don't know.
Well, anyway, so the police are investigating these elevator attacks, and then Felix, of course, gets called back to the building again because he's got to take another crack at figuring out what went wrong. And while he's there, he meets up with our secondary protagonist, Mickey DeBeer, the journalist who writes for The New Review. When she mentions this to him, I don't know if this is a real magazine or a paper or if it's made up for the film, but Felix reacts by saying, "Oh, The New Review, huh? I see it sometimes in my neighbor's bird cage." That was a good line. So that makes me wonder, is The New Review supposed to be some kind of tabloid? It's like the Weekly World News for the Netherlands. I don't know. But she is there because she's got a hunch. She's investigating this company called Rising Sun that makes the microprocessors we mentioned that are in that blue box that supposedly controls the elevator, that guides it. And of course, Bush, the guy from The Office, he's trying to get rid of her. He doesn't want her sniffing around, so he throws them out. Felix still can't find a problem with the lift, though it seems DeBeer has sort of caught his attention with her weird hunches. Oh, but from here, we go on to a tremendous bowling sequence at a place that I want to go to called Klaus Party House.
Yeah, I mean, in general, this film just does a great job with locations. Like, I'm interested in every minor location. Like, the house that the family lives in is very interesting. And this is, clearly a Dutch bowling alley from the early 80s. And I'm instantly just all into the background here. There's a banner that says Klaus Party House. Which I'm assuming is the name of the bowling alley. And then as they go to the bar and they're ordering a drink, the characters, and they're talking, I'm not really listening to them all that much because I'm noticing that the score panels above each of the bowling lanes, we're used to seeing the score up there. In a bowling alley. But here, it seems to be some sort of projection method because you see scorecards up there, but then the silhouettes of hands manually altering the scorecard.
Oh, they're like those projectors, like classroom projectors, yeah, where you can write on the transparency, but here you're writing the scores.
Which I just had no idea that this was ever a thing. Like, I've mostly been to bowling alleys that have the electronic scoring system and it scores it for you. And I've also been to at least one bowling alley where you had to do everything by hand on paper, but it wasn't in any way projected for you.
Well, I did love that. And I also love other things about this scene, which are the central premise, the character drama in the scene, is that Felix is too preoccupied with the lift and he can't focus on bowling.
Because it's a family affair. He's out bowling with, it's like a double date. He's out bowling with his wife and a couple of friends of theirs.
And the friends who, like, the guy, he wants a beer, but his wife's like, "No, you'll have tonic."
Tonic's pretty good. I've become a fan of tonic. Yeah, you got to get your quinine in.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
And then from here, the middle section of the movie, we might skip over a little more lightly. It sort of transitions into more investigation mode, and also family drama mode. But Felix and Mickey DeBeer, they start figuring out, well, something strange is going on with this elevator. Could it have something to do with this company, with this ominous name of Rising Sun? You know, that sounds like it could be sinister in some way. And so one of the leads that they get into is that Felix is at his office and he has some banter with like weird, crass coworkers. And then he finds out, the guy they referenced earlier, the former maintenance man at this tower who had worked on the elevator before, who is now committed to a sanitarium. Felix is wondering, could it be that he sabotaged the elevator? But everybody he talks to is like, no, that doesn't seem right.
He loved elevators. He would never do this to elevators.
And so eventually Felix goes to visit Brooker at the sanitarium, where Brooker appears near catatonic. Apparently he badly lacerated his hands when he previously attacked a television after seeing something on it he didn't like. And the question is, what did he see on the TV that made him smash the screen in? But, he can't get an answer. And then meanwhile, there's another elevator attack, or a near elevator attack. Unfortunately, this movie would not pass the Gene Siskel test for does this movie depict a child in peril? Because it manipulates you by suggesting that the elevator might kill a child, who, by the way, she's like hanging out in the lobby of the office building because her mom is having an affair with the building superintendent. But fortunately, the child is unharmed. The elevator does injure her doll.
So first of all, yeah, this is ultimately a good sequence, one that they again recreated almost shot for shot in the remake. I'm not as familiar with Gene Siskel's rule here. Was this something where, like, if you depict a child in peril, it's like automatically a thumbs down for him, or automatically lose the star?
Well, I don't think he actually had a formalized rule, but I recall from a number of his reviews, this was often something he would pick out that he didn't like about a movie, was that it had a scene where children were in peril. It seems to me like he thought that maybe that was in bad taste, or that it was manipulative or something.
Well, I'll let everybody know that no dogs or cats are killed by elevators in this movie,
right?
Though it apparently loves to kill rats.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And no children are actually harmed either. There's just the implication.
Yeah. The stinger to this scene, though, is that it like mangles her doll. Like,
right.
Basically the thing with the killer elevator is that it has to be very patient, and it doesn't have very many ways to influence the outside world. So it's not always going to actually score a hit. In this case, it was probably trying to kill a child. It just had to mangle a doll. And then when her mom comes out of the from the affair situation and finds out what's happened, she slaps the child across the face.
Oh God, yeah, that was weird. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I'd forgotten about that.
Oh,
we were like, what?
Yeah, and then she leaves, and we never see those characters again.
Yeah, very weird. Warning on that. Well, anyway, after this attack, we get back into the investigation, and so we've got Felix and DeBeer, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And and there's a breakthrough, I think, when they're sitting around talking. Well, first of all, there's a fun, I don't remember exactly where this happened, but there was one exchange that had Rachel and me laughing really hard, which was when Felix says something like, this lift does things it shouldn't. And De Beer says, I've done things I shouldn't.
All right.
Good point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she's like taken up for the elevator. It's like, come on, elevators.
I don't know.
My people.
But the thing they get to is that they start talking about Rising Sun, that manufacturer of computer chips. And De Beer fills Felix in on the fact that actually this company was featured on a science program on television last week. So I think we're supposed to recall, oh, that may be when Brooker, the previous elevator repairman, punched the TV.
Tagged to television, yeah. So from at this point in the film, we get into like full blown investigation mode, research, and also some family drama sprinkled in there. This makes sense, right? You can't just have constant elevator attacks. You got to pad things out just right. Mm-hmm. I feel like in a lesser film, this would have been a really boring slog, you know. The performances in this are all really good. The locations are great. All that helps to pull it along.
Yes, and another thing is, my single favorite scene in the entire movie is in this section, which is the scene where Felix and De Beer go to a professor in his like college classroom, mm-hmm. who explains what chips are to them.
Yes.
They're talking about microchips, but mm-hmm. He says the word chips like 400 times and starts telling all these bizarre anecdotes. They're all things like, once there was a chip that went insane and acquired a soul. They had to launch the chip into space, and that is the story of chips. And then, once there was a chip that rewrote its own program and it became evil, and they were forced to incinerate it in a nuclear bomb, and that is how chips work.
Now, he does say something about like there was this computer that went bad, and they had to just bury it in the ground. They had to like seal it away, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a scene that I liked it as well, because it kind of felt like a scene from a David Cronenberg film of the time period, where characters go to a professor or scientist who then proceeds to say crazy things that you don't really buy 100%. And then ultimately, I guess in the context of the film, like our protagonist, our main character, the elevator repairman, he's like, are you sure that guy knew what he was talking about? And she's like, yeah, he's an expert. He knows who he's
talking about. Brilliant. Yeah. He knows all about chips. He's one of the world's leading authorities on chips.
Yeah.
But the crucial fact we learn in the scene that will come into play later is that, according to this professor, sometimes chips are made out of living tissue and like their proteins and organic cells to create chips. But they stopped making chips out of things that are alive because the chips started growing too fast or something and could be influenced by radiation or magnets, and that became too dangerous.
Yeah, and this is where we're kind of getting into Cronenberg-y territory here, where suddenly this film is beginning to feel like it's not entirely in the real world, that it is in a slightly science fiction version of the early 1980s, which I like very much.
No, Rob, I think you're wrong. I mean, lest you forget that episode from Real History where Bell Labs made a computer chip out of a ferret's brain, and then it had to be sent into the core of the Earth, or else it would have taken over all of the telephone lines.
All right, fair enough.
Anyway, so we mentioned earlier that there was some foreshadowing of family strife and relationship drama between Felix and his wife and fears about adultery. That comes up later where there is, I don't know, I was talking to Rachel about this. She felt that this subplot was sort of unnecessary, and I can see why you would go there, because so what happens is Felix and DeBeer, while they're investigating everything, are like sitting at a cafe talking about their investigation, and some friends see them and then tell his wife, and they convince his wife that he is having an affair. And you can file this under a thing that happens in a lot of movies and I always find really annoying, and it is this. It's plot conflicts that are the result of a misunderstanding, which the protagonist could easily fix if they would just explain things, but for some reason they don't explain it.
Right.
So Felix's wife is like, you are committing adultery. You are cheating on me. And he could say, no, I'm not. I'm trying to figure out why an elevator keeps killing people. But for some reason, he just doesn't explain himself. And she leaves him. I find this a very annoying writing tick, and it's in a lot of movies, and I don't know exactly why that is so common. It might just be a problem where, like, I don't know, like the writer realizes that it would be tedious to have a scene where the character explains themselves, so you just skip over it. But like, it doesn't really make sense that a character would not bother to explain themselves. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're trying to get at the fact that these two clearly have some communication problems. But to this level where he's not going to just be like, no, there's like legit people dying at this building. Look, here's a newspaper clipping.
Or just
explain the situation more. But instead things escalate to the next level of him like walking in, going to that little container where she keeps all the little pop tops that she's collecting for that to enter to win a trip to Hawaii. And lo and behold, it is empty and his family is gone.
Yes, they have gone to Hawaii without him.
You collect the 100th soda pop, and you and your loved ones, and you can choose if your husband goes as well, are magically transported to Hawaii, and there's no coming back.
Right. But he didn't want to go to Hawaii anyway, remember, because he'd been to an island before.
He's been to an island, yes. He's familiar with it. He's like, maybe we could go to a peninsula. I don't know, but I've done an island.
I would like to go to a butte. Well, anyway, the investigation continues. So DeBeer and Felix go to the Rising Sun headquarters, the company that makes the chips that control the elevator. And a couple things to point out about the Rising Sun headquarters, actually more than a couple. Interesting location, by the way, very barren.
Yeah, this is another just a real coup of a location find, because it feels like they filmed this in the swamplands of Mordor or something. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know if this is like maybe an area of like reclaimed land in the Netherlands, and this is like the first industrial building built out there or something. But it looks just suitably desolate for a suspicious technology company to have its headquarters.
Like, when you drive into this location today, your navigation app switches its voice over to Andy Serkis and starts just saying, "This way, precious."
Yeah.
And so they're driving up on this barren swamp, and there's a sign out front. I know this is just regular Dutch, but to an English speaker, it looks amazing. It says "Verboden Togang," which means no trespassing.
Nice.
But Rob, I don't know if you noticed the other interesting thing about this building where they manufacture these chips. It's only two stories.
Oh, they might not have an elevator in there at all.
Yeah, no need for an elevator in this building. They go wide and low. So they come here and they meet with a Mr. Crone, a head of research. But they don't really turn up anything interesting. In fact, I don't even really recall much what they talked about in this scene.
Basically, he's just trying to blow him off. He's like, "I don't have time for you." They're like, "What's that? Is that because you go into this office, and immediately to your left is the room where they're doing the top secret stuff, but not so top secret that there's any security in place or anything." Right. So, and he's just basically like, "I don't have time for this. You've got to leave." And
I have to go back into this room that's bathed in red light.
Yeah. Yeah, we are told that most of the chips are made in Japan these days, but they apparently make some of them here, and they're mostly doing maintenance. But they're also like, we don't have anything to do with anything going wrong at a plant. Like, we have our name on the line here. Like, we're a professional organization. We're not an evil corporation. Why don't you get out of here?
Did you get the message that the chips that are made in Japan are just like, those are the normal chips? Those are the ones that aren't going to start killing people, but the ones they make here, these might be a problem?
I suspect, because we're basically leading up to a big reveal here, but I suspect they're making not a normal type of chip here. They're making some sort of a previously established, dangerous, Cronenberg-y type of chip, some sort of biochip.
That's right. So here we're going to get to our final showdown. I guess this is after Felix's family has left him. You know, he has nothing left to live for, really. He decides, okay, I'm going to go in, and I'm going to face the elevator.
Yeah, and this is like the last leg of the film, and I thought it was tremendous. I thought it was very well done. Yeah. I was legitimately concerned that Felix was going to be killed by this elevator at times, which of course is what you're supposed to feel as a viewer. It really had me on edge, crawling, in and out of this thing as the elevator is, of course, moving around with a will of its own, a murderous will of its own. It's kind of like the showdown in 2001, A Space Odyssey, except it's all elevator.
But it never talks. The elevator never gets to tell Felix, like, "Stop, don't do that." It doesn't sing Daisy. It just tries to crush him in various ways.
Yeah. And it's a great sequence. It's well shot. And then we lead up to the final part of the showdown, essentially, I don't know if we mentioned this earlier, but one of the first things he tries to do is to get into that blue box and cut off the chips, but it's empty. There's nothing in it. It turns out the computer center for this elevator system is somewhere else. And in this final sequence, he finds it in the elevator shaft itself, in this this compartment in the wall of the shaft that's leaking some sort of a glowing ectoplasm type substance. He has to crawl up there, and he's opening it up, and there is the biochip, this kind of slimy ectoplasm Cronenberg-y mixture of circuitry and, I don't know, like brain fluid or something.
I was calling it command slime. There is command slime at the core, and he tries to disrupt the command slime with a wrench.
Yeah, and it's really great because, of course, it also adds to the lighting of the sequence. So, yeah, he's trying to slam it with a wrench, and then the whole time the elevator is basically going up and down, I think something like hitting his body at times, trying to like rip him in half, and it's legitimately terrifying. Great sequence. In the remake, they do the same thing, except the brain chip stuff is pink and bigger and kind of looks a little bit like Krang.
Does it have a face?
No face, but very Krangy.
Okay.
Basically, In the original, it looks like Ghostbusters 1 slime, and in the remake, it looks like Ghostbusters 2 slime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, and there's a great rescue scene, actually, where so the elevator is going to crush him, and it looks like our protagonist is doomed, but then Mickey DeBeer shows up at the last moment and pulls him out of the shaft just in time.
I thought he was goners.
Yeah. I was like, that's it for Felix. Who's going to repair the kid's toy ambulance now and make it even louder than it was before? Mom's new boyfriend can't do that. But no, he's rescued and so together it seems like maybe they've saved the day and defeated the machine. But then we get a twist. The guy from the lab that's bathed in red light comes back, the guy from Rising Sun. And so what does he explain at the end? He's like, well, this chip isn't working like it's supposed to.
Yeah, he doesn't explain much, which I like. Like, basically, he shows up, he pulls a gun, and you're like, oh, he's come to protect the chip and to silence these people. But instead, he goes over to the shaft and shoots the biochip a few more times.
Yeah.
It's, again, already been, like, hit with a wrench or a screwdriver or whatever. And then he says something to the effect of, it was sick.
It was very sick, yes.
It was very sick. And he doesn't get much of a chance to explain anything else, because then what happens, with his back turned to the elevator shaft, one of the elevator cables, which had snapped earlier, comes out like a tentacle, wraps itself around his neck, and pulls him into the elevator shaft and strangles him to death.
Now, I think they're pushing it a little bit here, because I don't know how an elevator cable would do that, even if the command chip wanted it to do that. Even if the command slime was like, go reach out and get that guy. There's no mechanism for it to do that. But you know what? We're right there at the end. Our disbelief is suspended. They got us. They can get away with it.
Yeah, I totally bought it. And then, of course, we have a wonderful credit sequence where, what are they doing? They're taking the stairs. They're taking the stairs down from whatever floor this was on where we had the showdown.
I also like to imagine at the end that that DeBeer ends up writing about this incident in her tabloid. It's like right next to a story about Batboy or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out nobody actually takes this story seriously because she doesn't represent reputable journalistic publication. And that's The Lift. I have to say this one is a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally.
Now, you might be wondering, well, hey, I want to get in on this this action. Where can I watch 1983's The Lift? You can do like I did. You can simply sign up for the Full Moon channel. That way you have access to a number of B-movies. But in my case, you got access to both The Lift and the remake. So that's pretty good. But I believe there was also, there was a Blu-ray that came out. And you can pick this up. This one is out from Blue Underground, who have excelled with putting out some sort of cult following B movie type fare. Apparently, the Blu-ray for this has auto commentary from Dick Moss, so that sounds pretty good, along with some other extras.
All right,
so check it out if you're interested. All right, if you'd like to listen to other episodes of Weird House Cinema, we put this out every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. We're primarily a science podcast, but on Fridays, we put most of the serious matters aside and just discuss a weird film. And hey, if you dig Weird House Cinema, we now have an Instagram account for Weird House Cinema. It's just Weird House Cinema, one word, no breaks or anything. You can go look that up. And also, if you go there, you can find the links for this in the link tree. But I maintain a blog titled Samuda Music, and I basically just use that as a place to put little blog posts about the episodes as they come out. So if there's a trailer, I'll include it there. If there's some additional media that we've discussed that needs to go there, like, I don't know, the trailer for Amsterdammed, then I'll put that in there as well.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.